Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, Full Steam Ahead Edition. It is Purdue week.
Hey-o.
Purdue coming to Nebraska. I'm Evan with Sam, with Jimmy from the Omaha World Herald. And how appropriate is it that on Halloween weekend, Purdue Pete, maybe the scariest mascot in all of college sports, is coming to Lincoln and Memorial Stadium?
Oh, it is up there. He's definitely one of the stranger ones.
Scarier than the football game that's going to be happening at the stadium, though.
Oh yeah,
train wreck. Purdue games are kind of train wrecky and physical, Jimmy.
Yeah.
They always have a little bit of sloppiness to them. Turnovers, mistakes, wild swings in play,
injuries.
Injuries, especially there.
Yes,
they have a very advanced turf management program there. And they continue to use Bermuda grass and West Lafayette for their football field.
How do you know this?
Well, they make a big deal out of it. And what we to be honest with you, Nebraska's had many serious injuries at this place. So Spencer Long, I think, was out for maybe the whole season, right, with an ACL in 2013. DeMarne Pearsonell in 2015, out.
Yep.
Miles Farmer, out. All turf injuries, all like stepped funny, tore up something. Anyway, the grass there is kind of spongy. Like it's like a golf course fairway. So it's pretty. It's aesthetically pretty, but
your feet can get stuck in there and yeah, you have turned ankles and all kinds of
leg
injuries.
That's happened before. And it also turns brown late in the year because it just dies, but it stays together. So yeah, these have always been kind of ugly games. As for Purdue Pete, yeah, he's somewhat.
What's those black eyes, man?
Yeah.
They stare right into your soul.
Mm-hmm. Well, any mascot, I mean, the idea that your face is never changing, you don't have any real expression, that's kind of creepy to me.
Yeah, I think the Stanford tree is a little concerning, too. It's kind of a scary.
It's just kind of junky. I mean,
it is.
Yeah. It's like a Christmas ornament.
That's right.
It's like
that's concerning.
It's the recyclable from hell. I mean, Purdue Pete's just... I don't know. He can if he popped around the corner and those unblinking eyes just stared at you and discerned all your fears in like 2 seconds. No thanks.
I mean, if you saw Herbie in an alleyway late at night and he's just looking at you, would you feel great? I would not.
No,
I would not.
No.
Anyone wearing a head like
that, smirk would.
I think it's the plastic kind of sheen on the face that does it. Like
it reminds me. Have you guys ever seen The Purge? It reminds me of those masks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it's
that's
a bunch
what
of
mascots
Purdue
remind me of. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Vigilante justice. So, we're going to talk a little football today. We're going to talk some basketball today. We have some exhibitions coming up this week. Going to delve into some hoops. Let's get into the Big Red idea, though. Nebraska coming off the bye week. What do you guys think of the timing of that? Was that good? Was that a good time for a bye week for Nebraska coming off that Minnesota game, but also coming off of 8 straight? Was that a bad time for a bye week? How do you kind of break down just the timing of that as it relates to what's coming up here with Purdue?
It's a week late. But if you're talking about going forward, I think it was well-timed. I think what you would ideally want to do when you come off a bye week is have home games.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's kind of like you had a bye week, and then you get, you get to kind of, reacclimate into, and then you just flow right into a home game. So what Minnesota had, where they beat Purdue and then they had a bye week, home game, ideal. Nebraska got that too. It just came a week late, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think ideally you would have had a bye week, then you play Purdue, then you go to Minnesota, then you come back and play Ohio State. But that's not the way it happened. So, and Nebraska made a willing choice to play 8 games in a row. They knew it when they put the Ireland thing together. And so they're doing it again next year. They're not playing 8 games in a row next year. They're playing, I think, 6. But they did that. I mean, it should benefit them on the back end that they have 2 bye weeks over the course of 6 weeks. They should be very, very fresh at the end of the season, even though in that Minnesota game they looked run down.
Mm.
I agree with Sam. It came a week late. Anytime you're talking about lacking juice for a big time divisional game, anytime they just didn't have the same get up and go that they usually did in the first half of that Minnesota game, it cost them a game. But again, I think Sam took the words right out of my mouth. In terms of like if they couldn't get the bye last week, this is probably the second best time to get it. They needed to rest. I mean, they had a lot of injuries, a lot of nagging injuries that needed to be healed. They needed to, as the coaches have been telling us this week, they needed to take some time to evaluate some of the bigger picture stuff that they haven't had as much time to do with game prep. Just that cycle tumbling upon itself for the first 8 weeks of the season. They needed a breath. They have a breath, and it's funny. I feel like we're kind of exactly where we started at the beginning of the season. It's kind of a similar opponent. Purdue's not as we know now, not nearly as bad as Illinois, but a team that I think we all think Nebraska can beat, but we don't have confidence that they can actually do that because of what we've seen. We took a really crazy roller coaster ride to get here. The lows of the Illinois and Michigan State losses, the highs of almost Michigan, almost Oklahoma, thrash Northwestern, and now we're kind of settling right back. It's like the roller coaster came back around. We're ready to hop on the ride again with Purdue. It's interesting. It's interesting.
What I have found interesting this week is like the bye afforded everybody the opportunity, not from the player's perspective so much, but from the fan base, to take kind of a big picture assessment of things. So, you know, you're going week in, week out, game, opponent previews, you're looking ahead. And so with that week off, it felt like everybody kind of took a step back and said, okay, well, what's the state of the recruiting class? Okay, what's the deal with all the one-score losses? And it felt like it was a very kind of big picture,
red zone offense,
systemic sort of week to break things down. What's the status of Scott Frost moving forward? You know, and now it's back into Purdue week, and next week it'll be Ohio State week, and then I think we'll have another week after that of sort of, what's going to happen with the junior eligible guys? Will Adrian Martinez, like all those sort of thoughts and debates are going to crop up in 2 weeks. But I thought that was what was fascinating, was sort of the cumulative toll of the season kind of manifested itself, I thought, in how people viewed Nebraska in the last week.
Yeah, I agree. I would be really surprised if the majority of the contributors who were in that junior class came back, Evan. Wouldn't you?
Maybe. I mean, that'll be a good discussion for down the road, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I think this is it. I think this is the stretch run. I think this is the time. This is the place. Nebraska's older guys, I think, plan on making their stand now and kind of making, you know, they have a perfect opportunity, sort of starting with Purdue, because they need to win some games here at the end. But the next three teams they play are the boogeymen, mm-hmm, of Nebraska football.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, they need to play their butts off and win and get that confidence back. And then the next 3 weeks, they're going to be slaying dragons, or trying to, because those are the three teams they can't beat and have. Mm-hmm. And they've come close in various ways to two of them, and the other one not so much. But those are the three teams. Those are the three villains that sit on Nebraska football. And so I feel like this week is about, guys, we need to win, and we need to work on, and we're fresh, and we're not going to make any excuses, and we've got a home game, and we're going to go out and do this, this, and this. And then after that, I think those seniors have an opportunity, the juniors who are seniors, have an opportunity to make their statements against the teams that they haven't beaten.
Hmm.
It feels like an opportunity here down the stretch to do the things that you say you want to do, even if you don't win all the games, but to leave it all out on the field. And then to, you know, I don't know, maybe Ireland is the carrot that brings a couple of them back, but I just feel like it would be a lot after those four games, especially if they make a bowl, to be able to, let's go and do it again. You know, it's one more time, year six. This feels like the last month, and I think they're going to have a strong month. I do.
I understand that. I understand where you're coming from, Sam, where these guys are beaten down at this point, but at the same time, I would feel strange about them hanging their hats on, even if it is, you know, they get to a bowl game and they beat, you know, two teams that they haven't been able to beat before.
Yeah.
It would be strange to be like, okay, 6-6 bowl game. Maybe it's 6-7, 7-6, whatever. We did it.
Yeah.
That's the capper. That's the legacy right there. Mm-hmm. That would feel, you know, flat to me.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, that's the one hand, and then the other hand is kind of like, okay, I've been here for 5 years, 6 years. It's time, you know? Like, I get that sense with some
of the guys. Oh, I totally get the grind. The grind argument makes total sense to me.
You know, I graduated in 4.5 years. Am I really coming back for year six?
Yeah.
I'm kind of backing up the guys behind us here. Yeah. Am I really going to play in the NFL? Like, there's a whole lot of
factors. Dan will have a master's degree by spring.
Yeah.
So.
He graduated in, what, 3 years? Mm-hmm. I think it was, yeah.
He'll have a master's degree. There's not, I mean, you know, unless he wants to go for the first year of a PhD. How much is, you know, so there's examples of that. These guys have all been great in the classroom, all the rest. So it's I feel like this is it. This is a stretch for, not all of them. You know, I think like Etteva Maka Clemens will probably come back. And I'm trying to think of another, Phil Darius Payne.
Jordan Riley.
Yeah. But the guys that we're all thinking of in our mind, we don't need to say their names because everybody kind of knows who we're talking about. I think they want to finish right. Finish this thing well, you know? And it was too quick in 2018 to say that the culture was set. I don't think that was true. I don't think that. It's not nothing against Luke Gifford and you know, Foster. But it wasn't quite set, as we saw in 2019.
Clearly, yeah.
But this is an opportunity to set it, finishing strong, which I think they can do.
Don't you think Purdue is a decent matchup for Nebraska, yes, too, for all the reasons Minnesota wasn't, because of their kind of plodding ability to plod down the field and Nebraska's defense that bends but doesn't break. I mean, this is the kind of style Nebraska's defense wants to go up against, these
ideally
pass heavy styles.
I mean, they can get you.
Sure.
They've got good schemes, and you know, they've never failed to score against Nebraska. They scored 42, 31, and 27 in the first 3 years. So they'll score. But their defense hasn't been very good against Nebraska. They've allowed 28, 27, and 37.
It's interesting because both of those defenses are having a resurgence this year.
They are. But Purdue's defense is much better than it's been in the past. Mm-hmm. Some of that's the teams they've played. But you know what? They held a very good Oregon State offense to 350 yards, and Oregon State's going to go to a bowl. I mean, they could even win the Pac-12 North if they beat Oregon. So, you know, Purdue's played better offenses, honestly, than a lot of these other defenses in the Big Ten that haven't. They played Notre Dame. Notre Dame's not a great offense, but they held them back. You know, they've played some pretty good teams. So I think Purdue's defense is much improved, and they have some players in that front seven. Their defensive line is one of the three or four best in the Big Ten, and I'm not kidding. Like, they've always had players on that D-line. Where they've struggled is in the back end. They've never had great safeties and corners and things like that. They're not great tacklers, but their defensive line is legit.
I think the other interesting part is, you know, it was well noted that Purdue has had Iowa's number over the years. Recently, Wisconsin was the other way, where they never beat Wisconsin. And then Nebraska is sort of has been a 50-50 game for them the last handful of years. So, you know, I just think the matchup's really interesting with Nebraska coming off the bye, with Purdue coming off a Wisconsin game where you always are kind of a little beaten down physically.
Iowa and
that's
Wisconsin.
That's pretty historic.
Double date.
Yeah.
Interesting is certainly a word for Nebraska in 50-50 games. Certainly, yeah, a word.
Yeah, they are. They've struggled a lot to finish those games. I don't know that they're, you know, I think some of that, I think Frost was talking about that a little bit this week, the comments about wanting to put his team in situations where it's high leverage last week and kind of seeing how that goes. I think a lot of that's probably red zone. I think a lot of that's probably third down.
Casey Rogers was saying it was 2-minute drill, 4-minute drill, end of the game type stuff.
Well, they definitely have to get better in those circumstances. They have to get better late in games. And the thing that I would say, and I feel like I've got enough visual memory, and you've covered the whole era too, is their 2-minute drills on when the game's on the line don't even get past the 50. You know what I'm saying?
Northwestern 2020 is about the only exception I can think of there.
Right, they got down there. That's right.
But
a lot
often.
Of times they don't. It doesn't even get going. It's not like it's, oh, we got down to the 7, and you know, we just need one more play. On the 2-minute drills, they get to about the 50, and then they start doing shit.
Yeah.
Like Iowa. Let's run a quarterback in.
Right.
You know, that was 2 years ago. They got to the 40, and you know, they struggled to get inside the, you know, the 20. So I think that's part of it. And then the 4-minute drills, run the clock out, which they've struggled to do too. So, yeah, it's it's a program where it's interesting. You look at the numbers on offense, and this is where stats don't always tell you the truth. If we all sit here in a table, I think we'd all say Nebraska's defense has a cohesion and an understanding and a sense to it that even when they fail, we know why they fail, whereas the offense, you don't really know what's going to happen. It's an adventure. Every drive. You're surprised when they score. At least I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. I'm like, well, what's going to go wrong?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Minnesota, right before the Martinez safety 2 weeks ago, I commented to you, I think, Jamie, I said Nebraska doesn't ever come through in these situations. They just don't. One play later, safety, and...
You're probably looking at each other like, there you go. I mean, that was uncanny.
Yeah.
89 yards away, 5 minutes left. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a 2 minute.
Yeah, time wasn't a factor, really.
The first play, you're running guys 30 yards down. I'm like, run the football. You got a run play in there, don't you, for three, four yards? Give your quarterback second and seven. Instead, you're sending everybody out on a route. First play. Got to get 30 yards. What for? Are you going to... Because the whole point there is you want to score and leave the other team no time.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well take some time on the front end. Because you don't want to leave a minute and a half from Minnesota. You want to leave like 8 seconds.
And you know Adrian's banged up, too. That's the other thing. We didn't know as much about it as they seem to after as they let on that they knew after the game. You know your quarterback's banged up.
He needs to practice that. Right. Yes.
Why are you putting him in a position where he might have to create more time for himself?
I'll say this much for the injury stuff. Adrian Martinez is a really good dude. I don't think he enjoys having people make excuses for his play. And I think they should think a little harder about the way they talk about that. You know, everybody knows there's something up with his jaw because he got, you know,
popped,
tagged at Michigan State and hit hard. And people know that stuff. If he's good enough to play, he's out there. If he's not, he's not. And if you got to bring somebody in to run the football, you know, on your, you know, your quarterback run package, damn it, you got a guy that can at least do that. I don't know how much else he can do, but he can do that. He might be a better zone read guy than Adrian. So they've got to get more creative with how they bring that kid on the field, because I think Logan Smothers can handle a inverted veer or a zone read. He can. And they had an opportunity to do something there. That guy that for Minnesota, it's not like he's been, you know, the guy they brought in the game.
Not like
he's been playing for 4 years. Prior to him, it was Seth Green.
And you knew what they were going to do when they brought him in anyway.
That's right.
And he did it well.
Until they didn't, and they scored a touchdown on the first drive.
So I don't know if that was, we don't want to do to Adrian what we did when, you know, Luke was here. And they didn't even do it with Luke very often. You know, Luke comes in the 2020 Minnesota game. We figure, oh, you know, Adrian got something happened. And Adrian again gets a little hurt. Luke comes in. Well, at least we know he can run. What's he do? Throws it twice.
Yeah, right.
Throws an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you guys not? Anyway, we could go on a tangent all about that, but that's the issue that I think lies at the heart of the offense and why I wrote what I wrote a couple weeks ago. This is like, you guys don't really know who's going to come through for you on offense. On defense, I think they have a pretty good idea. And if a kid screws up, he screws up. But it wasn't because you had no idea. And when they put Jacquez Yant out there, they didn't really know on that play. And then they pulled him, you know, to a drive later, and they put in Morrison. Midway through the fourth
quarter.
Such
a weird
time. Let's just put him in. Let's see if he can do something. That ain't the move.
Or let's take out Betts and Manning, two of your more dynamic playmakers.
Well, they did.
That's the Morrison
against
thing.
Against Michigan? Yes, they did.
The
multiple games, yeah.
The Morrison thing is grasping at straws, searching for answers that aren't there. That's one of the – I mean, at that critical juncture of a game to make that kind of change, I get it, your options
well,
are limited.
Well, I function in the pass game. That's why it wasn't
yeah.
there. But, yes, it is grasping yes. at straws because the guy they normally put out there is Ramir, and then it was Gabe Irvin, and – you know, and they know that, okay, we're in a situation now where we got to throw the football, and we don't know if this guy can do that, and Marquis Stepp is whatever, so we got to put in Sevion. Like, it's – and you feel for them because they're trying really hard, and they're probably going to – you know, somebody is going to figure this out at the running back position and the wide receiver position, but it does feel like at times the guys that are on the field aren't necessarily the best guys. They have improved their offense. We have to be honest about they've hit more big plays. They've done the play designs are better. Matt Lubick deserves a lot of credit for that. So does Scott. But it's the personnel. It's the Jimmies and the Joes. you know, in those circumstances, they're just not, you don't know who you can count on.
Well, particularly up front. I mean,
that's right.
I mean, they're kind of, it seems like they're kind of stuck with the group that they have right now, which was the same group that started the year.
Yeah.
That group's not getting it done.
They're not great. No.
Particularly in pass pro.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're asked to do a lot.
That's true.
They're asked to fake run, block pass. They're asked to do a lot in that offense. I don't know if you guys know who Dan Orlovsky is. I respect him a lot. He's a former UConn quarterback who's now a...
He's the guy who took the safety when he was the Detroit Lions. He ran out of the back of the end zone. I think that's how most people know him, right?
Yeah, but he's good.
Yes. Like, no, he's a good analyst.
He called the Penn State Illinois game, and he made a comment actually about Patrick Mahomes. Because people are catching up to him. They're catching up. Mm-hmm. People are catching up to the Chiefs. And what he said was, when you build an offense that's rooted in RPO, everything's run pass option, everything, you don't develop a quarterback's pocket presence, and you also make it hard for your offensive line. He put this on Twitter. You make it hard for your offensive line because every play is a run pass set. You're not always sure what you're going to see. They have some dropbacks in their offense, and the intentional grounding safety was a dropback. I don't think that was necessarily Bryce Benhart's fault that happened. But a lot of times, you don't always know what your quarterback behind you is going to do. There's pluses and minuses to that offensive scheme, and one of the minuses is you give up negative plays because your offensive line is often trying to do two things at once. And, you know, we can say this with confidence. I don't think you covered Mike Riley, did you?
2017.
Did you? Okay. They didn't give up a lot of sacks. They didn't.
No, I suppose not.
Now, some of that was Tommy, when Tommy was there.
Tanner Lee in
2017. They didn't give up a ton. They did not give up a ton of them. They gave up a ton early. Oregon, Northern Illinois. But as that season went on, you go back and look when they played Penn State. Tanner threw it 55 times.
Yeah.
They stopped giving them up, partially because Mike Kavanaugh's a good pass pro, and they got good at it because they were used to doing it over and over and over again.
Yep.
And, yeah, Tanner Lee did get knocked out with a concussion in the middle. I get all that. So they gave up some, but relative to the number of dropbacks they had, they were pretty good.
Yeah, right. I agree.
And, you know, there's just things like you watch Matt Farniok, and Matt Farniok was not a great pass pro guy at Nebraska because he was trying to do three things all the time, you know, and now he's in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just things that I think people don't always understand about how that offense works and the weaknesses of it. And it really helps to watch the NFL on Sunday because then you can watch Lamar Jackson and you can watch Patrick Mahomes. And you can say these are unbelievable elite athletes who are doing incredible things, and their offensive line often seems like it's not very good, and some of that's because they don't always know what the quarterback's going to do because he's so dynamic. And it's been notable to watch people catch up on Holmes while there's some other quarterbacks who are relatively immobile, they're just kind of standing there, who are having, you know, renaissance kind of seasons.
Yeah.
Now Josh Allen's both, but there's interesting to watch some of these guys that are kind of stationary having good seasons.
And Tom Brady's guys know what he's going to do.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
As do Joe Burrow's. And Joe Burrow's not a runner.
Yeah, good point.
They're more subtle pocket movers.
Right.
They move.
Right.
They just don't. They're not running in big U shapes back in the formation. They're, you know, a step here, a step there.
Right. And Martinez has gotten better at moving up into the pocket, to be clear. I think what they've worked with Martinez on is don't bail out of the play and roll hard to your right and throw across your body to God knows who and risk an interception. So they've gotten better at him sticking in that pocket. What happens, I think, when he gets there is there's pressure in his face and he's not gonna throw an interception, so he takes it, you know, right in the face mask. And that's tough, you know, but they're not turning it over. You go back and watch Adrian, for example, 2 years ago. We saw a lot of that. He loves to run to his right.
Yeah, he'd bail out and
he'd go right.
Try to improvise, yeah.
And he would try to do something, and it didn't always go well. And once he got hurt, I mean, Northwestern, he was out of the pocket. And So I think what they found is he would get hurt out there, do other things. Let's keep you in the pocket, keep you safe. He got hurt. He hurt that ankle against Michigan on that fumble. Because Aiden Hutchinson came up from behind and wrenched him on, you know, grabbed him at his legs, hurt him. He fumbled. That's why you don't do that on third and two. We've talked about this so many times on it. When you do it, you risk it. And he got hurt because of that.
Hmm.
I think that's when his ankle got hurt, because Aiden Hutchinson went right at his ankle. So
yeah. One other big picture question, you kind of got onto this a little bit, Sam, is what's really on the line over these last four games? Like, yeah, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa have held Nebraska down for a long time, but, like, you know, the range of outcomes here is anywhere from finishing 3-9 to bowl eligibility on the other end and exercising a few demons. I'm just, you know, as you look at, I guess, what Nebraska football is beyond whether they go to a bowl game or not, because that's kind of the thing everyone's focused on right now. Can it end in any other way than some sort of assistant coaching changes in the offseason, a tense offseason, and a hot seat 2022? I mean, it feels like that's what we're headed toward regardless of how this thing ends.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there are other possible outcomes for into the offseason and next year that can change with these last four games?
What do you think, Jimmy?
I mean, if they come out and win all these games 35-0, sure. Sure, that could change.
Nothing's impossible.
Sure. But no, I feel like we're kind of in a state of stasis here. I think that, first of all, we have most of the body of work that we're going to have from the season. The season is over half done, right? So that is, you know, we're going to have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, of where everyone is progress-wise, because we've seen most of the data points.
Right.
Now, I guess we could, I think it's more likely that we could see something spring the other way. Like if things start to go real south, they lose out and, you know, they lose to Purdue close. I don't see Purdue blowing them out. But the next three games are ugly. Maybe we do start to see a complete reshuffle. But in terms, I do think something's going to change on the staff pretty much no matter what, unless they put together a real hoorah of a run. And at that point, Sam, to our point earlier, yeah, go ahead. And for the older guys, if you want to leave on that kind of note, go ahead. But I feel like we are going to be stuck in that middle ground, Evan.
Defensively, you know, let's break it down by sides of ball. Mm-hmm. You know, let's think about it maybe the way Trev might. I don't know how Trev will think about it. I think defensively, you look at the outlay, and the outlay looks really good, right? I think the depth that they have, the experience that they would have coming back, you can see the waves over the next 3 to 5 years. 3 to 4. You can see it. Okay, so Damian Daniels leaves. They know who they're going to put in there. They know. You're probably getting DeAndre Thomas back. You're getting Ty back. You're getting Casey back. You're getting Nash Hutmacher back. They like Nash a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of know where they're going there. I think JoJo's a question mark because obviously you have to replace him, but maybe you feel really good about what Isaac Gifford's going to do. And then they have a very good idea of what they want to do at middle linebacker. They have a weakness there on third down, covering guys. They got to figure that out, but I think they've identified it. We've identified it. Need to go in the transfer portal and get a pass rusher. Need to develop somebody. That's a big question mark. I think secondary is going to be better next year, even if Cam and those guys leave. I think the guys they got behind it are good, and they're sound. And I think one of the things that I like about a lot of those guys, Newsom included, Newsom's a sound player. He's not perfect, but he's sound. I think Buford will be sound. I think they're going to be all right. Offensively, is the big question. You can solve some problems in special teams by specialists. You've got to recruit them. You got to go get them. You got to hope they're right. Offensively, to me, is where, if you're talking vision, the whole program is rooted in who are we going to be on offense, how are we going to score, this game style where we want to score first, et cetera, et cetera. They've really struggled to make that real since Frost's been here. How do you get to the point where you make it real? And to me, you've got to get really good skill players. You've got to get the skill players that you know are the most talented players on the team on the field. And that's a That'll probably be for Frost if he's still here. And I kind of expect him to be, honestly. A come to Jesus with not only those players, but his assistants. Like, guys, you know the most talented players in your room are X, Y, and Z, and they're not playing very much. That has to change. Like, we've recruited enough forward, you know, he can say to his staff, guys, we've recruited enough four stars on offense that we ought to be pretty damn explosive. Why aren't we? Or why aren't those guys always on the field? Like, what's going wrong? And if you throw in getting a new quarterback in there, there's actually an opportunity to say we're going to be a little less quarterback-centric and we're going to develop around that quarterback a little bit more. Because I think what we've all seen in this last however many years is if you decide that the quarterback is the superstar and you don't put enough around him, that superstar gets hurt, he makes mistakes, and people are frustrated with him. And I think that's what happens. They've built the entire offense around Adrian, and I think as a result, he makes spectacular plays, but he also gets hurt and he frustrates people. So that's the vision. I don't know how they're going to resolve those things because they're going to go into the transfer portal. They have to.
And you're living dangerously in the transfer because you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know who's available. You don't know who your competition is.
You can't recruit it until they transfer.
Exactly. You don't have a board. You react. It's a reactionary thing. It's not something that you can plan for.
Well, Caden Lyles is on the board, right? The Wisconsin guy that played 34 games at offensive line. He goes on your board.
But for the most part,
is that guy going to Wisconsin? Is he going to Nebraska? Probably not. But he's on your board.
Sure. But for the most part, you're going to wait till seasons are over. Then guys are going to jump in. They're going to move on one way or another. Guys from Nebraska will probably jump in and move on somewhere else. And so, yeah, it's just, to me, it's a really... It's a gamble. It's a big risk because you can't build it if you're not going to build it traditionally through the high school ranks and kind of know what you have the way the defense has done it.
Right.
Then you got to hope the right guys are in there that they come and join you. And then even just hearing players this week talk about their transfer portal journeys a little bit, just because they come in right away doesn't mean everyone's going to. They're not a plug and play. They still have to learn the system. They still have to be healthy. We've seen in some instances where guys bring injuries with them that they didn't know they had. Yeah. So it's just it's a quick fix that can work. I mean, Michigan State did it pretty well this year, but man, I don't know. It's just not a sustainable thing. And I think that's their strategy in year four or after year four. I don't know. It's telling that. The foresight wasn't there, and that now on the back end they really need to scramble to fix some things.
Is that also a product of the hot seat that we're talking about here? Like, Scott knows I've got to get this thing rolling in a hurry, yeah. And you know, no matter, like, I've had a couple of strong recruiting classes now. That's not gonna. I need to fix things quicker than that. You know, maybe that is the best thing for the program's future 3 to 5 years from now to hit the trail hard again. But for me, who wants to keep doing this, I need to bring in some older guys that I think can make an impact right away.
We're going to talk about basketball in a minute, but I think that Frost has changed from a F it. We'll play freshmen. We'll play seven of them if we have to. We'll play them all season. We're going to get the kind of freshmen who want to play and can play and, you know, are a revelation in the Big Ten. To, we need to be a developmental program. Mm. We need to find our share of Luke Reimers and the walk-ons, and then we need to find, a tight end like Austin Allen, who's going to be an NFL player, and he is. He's an NFL prospect in year five, and we need to find a Damian Daniels who's going to be a little raw around the edges for a couple of years, but by year four he's going to be tough, and so on and so forth. Mm. Like, I think they now want to be the program that gets the rocks and over time puts them in the tumbler. And polishes them up over time. And then then it's a jewel. But you've seen this shift in their recruiting philosophy and their emphases. I think mm-hmm. they're going more toward, hey, let's get height, let's get length, let's get weight, you know, let's get big guys. But we have to become a developmental program. And the problem with that is that they have so many young guys in the program that they want to develop that I think they just don't want to. They don't want to move on from them, you know, and they've got a glut of players, and they didn't make a decision beforehand on what they were going to do with the juniors.
Well, they left it to the juniors to decide.
Well, they didn't have to. There could have been a very clear conversation of, now, what do you think? Before the season, hey, we need to know, because we need to know the spots, because we have to have a clean number of spots that we know we're going to go after. And if there's 17 of you guys and you guys get an extra year, we want to gauge your opinion now. And maybe they did this. What do you think? Is this it? Is this your senior year? Again, I'm a different kind of person. I would have almost exclusively said, this is your final year. I would have said, this is it. You're the last ride here. Barring something unforeseen, I want you to put everything into this season, because we're recruiting. We got to keep getting high school players. And I think Nebraska is a loyal program. I'm not, you know, I'm obviously a different person. But I'm not saying I'm not loyal. But I'm saying that, like, I think Nebraska was like, yeah, we're going to let these guys decide. And, like, it surprises me that a seventh-year linebacker needs to come back.
Sure.
Like, I would say, you're good. I'm sorry that happened. You know, we got Nick. We got Luke. But I think they actually want him back because I think he can be good in pass coverage. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a bigger believer in the system needs to be right. I need to have clarity in my decision-making. And I feel like Nebraska's got very little clarity. I mean, let's say they make a bowl, Evan. Let's say they do. Let's say they win three of the last four. And it's December 1st. And these kids are hitting the transfer portal. And you don't know how many spots you got because your season isn't over. Mm-hmm. Do you go to the kids in December 1st and go, all right, guys, we're 6-6. Is this going to be your last game? Okay. Like, what do you
think? I think you do.
I would think so.
I think a lot of players these days treat those bowl games as extraneous to the season. You know, Brendan Hymus last year treated that extra game as such and moved on, and I think people generally understood that. But
does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think, like,
they may not be able to get to the portal until January if they go to a bowl game, because they won't necessarily know how many people are leaving.
To Sam's point about having the conversation at the beginning of the year, I don't have a problem with going to anyone before the bowl game and saying, hey, checking in with you. How are you feeling about this? But it's weird to do that if you haven't broached it before.
I know.
It's weird to do that, and then you wait all this time, and you're not going to wait the extra 3 weeks to just wait for the season to end? That's not great decision-making.
And
right
to
there.
Be clear, if 15 of those juniors come back, then what they did was really smart. Because what they did was they were like, we think all these guys are going to come back, and we're going to be really, really seasoned next year because mm-hmm. we'll have 15 6-year seniors. Then it's genius, and that may be what happens. You know, it may be that everybody but two or three just say, hey, I'm coming back. Year 6, baby. Let's roll. And then Nebraska looks really smart because basically what they did is they recruited back 10 starters. So we'll just see. But you're right in the sense that it's risky. You know, I think they knew before the season that Brendan Hymus was not going to come back.
Yeah, he looked the part of an NFL.
I think that was pretty understood.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, they knew that. I think that was his decision. And I think Farniak was at that decision. I'm not sure that when they went in after the game against Rutgers that they were sure that all those players were coming back on defense.
Oh, I don't think they knew. No,
they gave them time. Remember, yeah. I was skeptical that I didn't think they'd all come back.
Right.
And a lot of them did. The only one who didn't was Boodle.
Boodle, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. But that's a big question of, like, recruiting matters. I know Trevor Albers looks at recruiting too. I know it matters to him. So he's paying attention, and that strategy needs to pay off.
I certainly don't think we have a great grasp on whether Adrian Martinez is coming back. Do we think? I don't think that, well, we are in the dark on that as we could possibly be. What is the gap between what we know about that decision and what the Nebraska coaching staff knows about that decision, do you think?
I don't think it's that big. I mean, I think they want him back. Scott Frost said as much before the season.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question.
They'd love to have him back. I think you see all these Big Ten coaches embracing Adrian and whispering in his ear after the game. I think, you know, there's some other schools that would love to.
Oh, they're telling him goodbye. I think there's
come play for us next year.
I don't know what they're doing. But, like, if I don't see you again in this league, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate everything you've done.
Mm. Yeah, the only other point I wanted to make with this senior junior thing is like in an abstract sense, it makes sense to kind of have them declare earlier. But like, if you know these guys as coaches and you're developing them and you know that like maybe they want to go to the NFL, you got to see how the season plays out. Like,
yeah.
Like Damian Daniels has, I think, drastically increased his pro stock over these last eight games. I think Austin Allen has been that way too. But then there are some other guys who, you know, maybe it hasn't turned out quite that way. And maybe one more year of tape to work to develop and work toward their dreams. Like, you know, if that's the goal as a coach or one of your goals, then, you know, I can see where they're coming from. But it does put you in a corner.
Got conversation. Like when you guys got to your senior years of college, you know, if somebody had come up to you and said, you know, I'll tell you what, we'll pay for your tuition, all of it, the whole tuition, just to come to college for an extra year, do what you're doing at the DN. What was the paper at the...
The Post.
The Post. Do just keep doing what you're doing, maybe do a little bit more. How about it? Would you have said yes?
I'd thumbs up that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd think about it.
Yeah.
See what kind of classes or education might play into that.
I mean, you'd have to, you know...
I mean,
I still had a lot
with
of
the knowledge that
than
you're
me.
Postponing your professional career. Does it make sense?
Yeah,
like
but
you don't get to do both. You get to only do one. So if somebody says, I'm going to pay for your tuition to stay here, or you can go out and get a job.
It's so nuanced, though, because like for some of these guys, it would be eating off a year of their potential NFL career. For other guys, they probably know that they're not going to be playing
that's
in the league.
Point.
And so, hey, let's hang on for another year in football before I get a job as, you know, an accountant or a, you know, whatever right. that I'm doing after
out of
that.
Those juniors, there's quite a few NFL like pre-agent or draftees, though. I mean, seriously, I'm not blowing smoke. There are.
So then it becomes like, do you want to spend a couple years on a practice squad and maybe get called up? Or do you want one more year in college where you can have take some free classes, get some money, maybe go to a bowl game? Like, I agree. I think the NIL legislation does change that conversation. It used to be so much more black and white even 3 years ago, but now I think it is. It's a very personalized, nuanced discussion that's going to be really interesting to follow from December into January here in the off season.
Yeah.
Let's go to basketball then.
I'm
sitting here with the last two beat writers of Nebraska basketball. Sam did it last year. Jimmy, you're embarking on it now. You rolled out the preview stuff this week, which was really good, breaking down the positions. I'm curious, what surprised you or was interesting to you as you did that? And then in a bigger sense, from either of you guys, like what are some just big picture narratives this year that you're looking for and that people can be looking for?
Surprises. I was surprised with how much I was on board with the Wilhelm Breidenbach hype. Because you look at that guy. I mean, he's got the goggles. He's got the lumberjack beard. And he's a skinny fella. He is. But the dude is so skilled. I mean, there are the clips exist of this 6'10 wildebeest-looking creature running fast breaks, dribbling behind his back. And it's high school. He's not going to do a ton of that here. But
sure.
He's going to – they're going to use him to facilitate. They're going to let him dribble the ball in the half court. He's going to play – if he was 15, 20 pounds heavier, I'd say he might be able to usurp Derek Walker as the starter by the end of the year. The coaches love him so much. He's such a perfect modern big. He has such a great skill set for what – Hoiberg wants to do. So there's a surprise. Big picture narratives. I wrote about Bryce McGowan's yesterday. Quick sidebar on him sort of embracing this role as face of the program. And that I think that he's right to embrace that because whether anyone wants to, you know, whether anyone in Nebraska wants to embrace that around him or not, it's true. I wrote this in his little capsule preview. He is the single most important player on this team, not just this year. I mean, any of the guys who stay from this year's team going forward, you could argue they won't have as much of an impact on Nebraska basketball going forward as McGowan's because they got the shiny star. They grabbed it. They hoped for it. They reached for it. They grabbed it. They got it. How his experience goes at Nebraska will go a long way to determining whether they can get another one. If Bryce, you know, raises his draft stock here, has a great year, I think there's a pretty good chance that they can get some of these guys who are visiting football games to actually sign here. If he's miserable here with his brother here and doesn't go well, that's not great. I mean, Matt Abdelmassi's track record of recruiting guys is proven. I'm not going to say that he wouldn't be able to pull it, but it would be harder. It would be harder if this Bryce thing doesn't go well. And so we have Bryce as sort of the figurehead of the entire thing, but you contrast that with it's an egalitarian style that Fred's trying to play, and it's supposed to be all for one, you know, five pieces.
Yeah.
You know, the machine looks great when everyone's doing their part.
Sure.
And Price isn't the only guy with a lot to gain from this season. Alonzo Verge tested the NBA draft waters last off season, and I think he said it. The biggest sell for him was the NBA system here. He thinks, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I'm just connecting dots here. I think Alonzo Verge thinks that him playing here will show NBA guys, oh, he can do this.
Right.
Okay, because I don't think he was going to get drafted last year.
Right.
And Trey McGowan has said a couple of times that he wants this to be his final year. Well, he's a junior, so that means he wants to go to the NBA. So there are a lot of guys on this team with aspirations to get to that next level. And you know what? If they win 20 games because they all look so great in Fred's system, maybe that can all work for everyone. It's a tricky dance to do.
That's good.
What do you think, Sam?
I don't know that I have a lot of thoughts. You know, I will look at the team thing, and I'll say that, you know, the team's got to be a lot better. And the Big Ten is tough, and
if there's a year where it's gettable, I mean, I'm not saying like winning the thing, but like this is an easier year.
This is a year where Nebraska, based on the talent profile that it has, can get to the middle of the league. If you get to the middle of the league, you're on the bubble. Not guaranteed, but you're in the bubble. You're in the conversation, and that's kind of where they want to get. The thing that I will say is that, you know, it doesn't really matter whether Nebraska is a good developmental program for the NBA if they don't win games. The upshot isn't look at this player we got and look at where he's going playing. You know, this isn't the Nebraska Mad Ants. So the key is not just does it improve Fred Hoiberg's personal coaching profile. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Win games. So I think the way that program is run is really, really good in the sense that, like, there is a lot of clarity. Guys know when they're moving on. They're moving on, right? I'm sure Trey understands that, like, hey, this is it. And we're gonna keep adding guys to the team that we think can help. So you can't expect back here in March to be where you are in July. How do we know? Because we added Alonzo Verge. We didn't just let Delano Banton leave and then say, well, Trey, score a few more. No, we added a guy that's going to score more than you. So they're good in that way. Like, I appreciate that. That kind of approach ideally should produce the kind of results that put, you know, butts in the seats at PBA and get them in the conversation for postseason. Whether it's NIT or NCAA, I got to be honest with you, I don't know that Nebraska fans care that much. I'm not trying to say it isn't important to win NCAA tournament games. I think it is. But if you told me Nebraska's going to go to the postseason the next 6 years, four of those are going to be NITs, two of those are going to be NCAAs, and they're going to win just one NCAA tournament game, they might be talking about putting a statue of Hoiberg out there. Like, it's not like it has to be a genius or they have to go, you know, 30-5, 30-2. They have to get back to that point. And what I will say is we've probably reached that moment in the program where, you know, talking about the NBA will only have resonance if you're winning games. Like, Mike Riley ran an NFL offense. Who cares? They didn't win. And people actively disliked him for it. So Now, Nebraska basketball fans are a lot more lenient, but this will be that year where, you know, based on the talent they have, and it's Jimmy wrote a great story about the most talented team, the last most talented team, in 95-96. And that team did have a total default. They won the NIT, though. If this team wins the NIT, I mean, Fred's getting an extension, and he's getting a raise. So that was almost the end of Danny Neese's career. But if that happens here, now, Fred's going to be able to go out and sign 3 5-stars.
This is proof that we can do it. You know,
I mean, that's what it'll be. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the bar is not that high, and it's time to clear it. And, you know, last year I think they thought they had a really good team. They scheduled really aggressively in the golden window. Then that whole thing fell apart. Probably good that it did, because they were 7-20. But, you know, you want to have grace. Their COVID stuff was a mess, and they had a hard go. And Banton, you know, he was I still haven't written this story yet, but the food thing last year was a real problem for this program. They didn't get the training table the way the football team did. They just get a meal sent over. And so a lot of times they didn't know what meal they were going to get, and the meal was – so Latman was telling me about a time that I think Delano sent everybody a group test. He said, what is this? And these guys are not from Nebraska. Like, they don't. They're used to specific kind of foods, and so, like, you'll ask, like, what do you wish you had on that? Because they're like, we want the bar because then we can make our choices and we can kind of – and they're like, there's some guys on the team, like, pasta is what they eat every day. And, you know, you got to have pasta. They maybe eat something else, but pasta is where they start. And some of those times, those meals are just – so the team lost a lot. It just did, and that's all back. And so I think they're going to be much better. The presence around Nebraska basketball is so interesting because Bryce comes up and talks yesterday. Nobody really – I don't know anybody requested him to come up and talk. He just comes up. This is great. They do the media stuff so well. And, you know, he's got 25 people around him. I think he handles that pretty well. What you hope is that there's success early so that you can kind of get the hype out of the way and then you can just start playing basketball. And you know, and hopefully the team's winning. Because if the team wins early, then it doesn't really become about Bryce. It becomes about, hey, man, might go somewhere, might make a tourney, and that helps everybody. So hopefully the focus can shift away, because Abdelmassi said, and he said it jokingly, but he's like, anybody else getting tired of Bryce talking? I know I'm getting tired. He was joking. But I think the point was, all right, let's play some basketball. Let's stop talking about what we're going to do and what he could mean. And let's just see what he does. And let's win some games. And then all of a sudden Bryce is going off to the NBA after averaging 12-6 and next to the resume, it's led Nebraska to the NCAA tournament. And you have a story on every guy on the team. It's not just Bryce, but it's, well, Ladd averaged 7 and he hit a bunch of threes, that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yes. You covered a lot of ground there. And I love your Nebraska Mad Ants line. That was very good.
Yeah.
I would say that I think one goal will beget the other. If Nebraska can put all this talent together and form a cohesive unit out of a lot of parts that are very talented individually, then you're going to see more, you know, more success begets more, right? NBA guys. If they make the tournament run and Alonzo Verge scores, you know, 27 in a Big Ten conference semifinal tournament game and, you know, has 8 assists in that game, he'll have a better chance of getting drafted. Trey McGowan's, you know, though a lot of NBA teams are, it's the dog days of the regular season during March. Mm-hmm. So their eyes are glued to that stage. And there is an element of old school scouting where they want to see what you do on that big stage. It's really cool.
True bowl games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's really cool that you know, had a great game in the, you know, if someone goes off against Auburn in Atlanta, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different deal if you do that in the Big Ten tournament or in an NCAA tournament game. So I do think that the Nebraska Mad Ants can be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
How much money did Davion Mitchell make, for example, in the NCAA tournament? Quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was.
He was not going to be a top 10 pick before then. No.
And he was the best player in the tournament, so it helped. Yes. But No, that's a good point. And again, the thing that I appreciate about Fred Hoiberg and his system and the way they play is that when you watch the basketball game, you know why they won and lost.
Mm-hmm.
There's such clarity there.
Oh, and he'll tell you.
The muddy. Yeah, but like you can watch it
sure,
and know.
Sure.
Like there was a little bit of muddy with Teddy Allen and kind of doing things that were not really in the system. But, you know, you knew. Like at the end of the game, you knew why they lost. You knew. You could kind of sense that. And, you know, there's a good beat pool that covers the team. It's smaller, obviously, than football. But everybody kind of has a gist. And so when you'll do the post-game interviews, you know, I can name these people fine. You'll ask a question. Robin will ask a question. Baznet will ask. And it all kind of – Jacob will ask a question. It all fits into the puzzle of we just watched the game and we kind of know based on who we know about Fred that we know why the game turned out the way it did. And it's a very organized post game because Fred just kind of goes through it. Yeah, you're right. Good question. This was this. And so you know. And so one of the cool things about watching them is I think fans can go and they can say, because they're going to be able to go now to the court and to the games. And when you watch them run the court, you're going to say, all right, I know what they're trying to do here. When they don't get early offense, you'll know what they want to do. What's their secondary offense? He calls great plays. He hates it when guys get to that 12-foot spot and then they just bail and do a stupid shot or they draw a charge. Like, people will figure out his culture right away in person. And this team actually has it. His first team, which is what fans saw, was such a mishmash of differing styles and guys that didn't know what they were doing and freshmen that were shooting threes who couldn't hit them. And so, like, there was a lot of things going on there. So people will genuinely enjoy watching it. It'll be like, and I'm not trying to knock Nebraska here, it'll be like watching Creighton. Creighton, when you watch them, you know what they're trying to do. And this will be the one year where Nebraska looks like they know what they're trying to do and Creighton's still trying to learn.
Hmm. Go to picks?
Picks.
Evan has taken the lead.
Watch out. I'm going to start running the ball.
So actually, I'm sorry, you're not behind one, Jimmy. You're behind two. I'm behind 10. So.
Sense of urgency.
When Evan gets in, he starts playing the numbers. He's like blackjack now. So you have to take chances. You got to hit.
Evan does not like when I take chances.
You got to hit on 18.
Well, that's a whole different discussion. Taking chances and playing foolishly are two very different things.
What did you do?
I hit on 12 probably when I wasn't supposed to. Something like that. He'll signal me. He will.
Did he do this?
He'll.
It's not just me.
He'll woe tiger me.
It's not just me.
It's true.
You're not supposed to hit on 12.
If the dealer's showing a bus card.
Yeah.
Okay.
And other people, including the dealer, are like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'm sure.
I've been steered wrong by dealers before.
Yeah, well. Anyway, let's go to the picks.
You ready? Iowa, Wisconsin.
Whew. I guess got to start throwing down the field at some point, right? Wisconsin.
I think they're actually favorites. I'm going to go Iowa, though.
Why?
Are they actually favorites?
Wisconsin is the favorite. Yeah,
they are.
Huh.
Oh, I was coming off a bye, are they not?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they're not as bad as Purdue made them look. I like their chances.
Wisconsin. Rutgers, Illinois, at Illinois. Rutgers off a bye week at Illinois.
Off a 9 overtime game.
Yeah. I mean, if Illinois can rebound and win this game, that's pretty impressive. I'm going Rutgers.
Rutgers, too.
Illinois. SMU at Houston. SMU is undefeated. Houston is 6-1. I am going Houston.
Cougs.
Okay.
Houston.
Virginia at BYU. Late night game. Late night football. Bronco Mendenhall going home to his old program.
Being an independent school kind of rocks sometimes.
Yeah.
You get so many cool matchups.
Yep.
BYU.
I feel like I've fallen back on BYU quite a bit, but I'm going to do it again. They're at home. I like their chances.
Yeah, I'm going to take Virginia. They have a dynamic offense. I like the Hoos. They go by Wahoos, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Fresno State at San Diego State. This is probably the two best teams in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
But they're on the same side, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I think they're on the same side. I think the mountainside is led by Air Force, or maybe Boise. I think Air Force, actually. We'll see.
I'll go Fresno.
I got San Diego State. Good defense.
You have SDSU?
I do.
I'm going to go Fresno, too. You know who the coach at Fresno or San Diego State is, right?
It's your boy.
Oh, Brady Hoke.
Brady Hoke, yeah.
That's right. Texas at Baylor.
Texas.
Okay. Texas.
You both feel pretty good about that.
Nice season for Baylor, though.
Not a believer in Dave Aranda. Texas. Florida, Georgia. World's largest cocktail party. I don't know if it is a cocktail party anymore with COVID.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah.
World's largest sealed water bottle.
Socially
party.
Distanced.
Yeah. Takeout
drinks.
Drinking
afternoon.
Yeah.
They might have the biggest video board I've ever seen, incidentally, at that stadium. Like, it's huge. It's not as big as the one in Atlanta or in Dallas. But the one that just comes out of the ground, that thing runs the entire length of an end zone in Jacksonville.
This is going to be a really cool game. I got Georgia until I just got to see it until it happens.
Yeah, their defense is too dominant. Georgia.
Georgia for me. Ole Miss at Auburn.
Ole Miss.
Uh-oh.
Feels like a toss-up to me, but it's in Auburn, so I'm going Auburn.
Going against Bo Nix.
I know. Love hate. Love hate with Bo.
That really surprises me, even wounds me a little bit. I'm going to go Auburn. I put ABU. North Carolina at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Yeah, I guess. Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Penn State at Ohio State.
Buckeyes.
I think Buckeyes by a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's falling apart in Penn State. James Franklin's thinking about Illinois.
Evan, when
they're
we
going,
were in the...
He thinks they're going to the Big House. It's all very confusing.
Evan was reading me the James Franklin. For those who don't know, people were asking James Franklin about the USC rumors, and he was telling everyone how he was focused, locked in on Illinois this week, and he couldn't wait to go to the Big House. Neither of those things have anything to do with Ohio State, so that man's under a lot of stress right now.
He said the Big House?
So he's looking forward to going to the Big House.
And he's really focused on Illinois.
Maybe he did that on purpose.
I listened to the audio. I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so.
It was really weird. Ohio State.
Michigan State. Oh, I'm looking forward to this game.
That'll be fun. I think this is where Michigan State comes down to earth. I think the Wolverines, too many athletes. Michigan.
I kind of like Michigan State's offense more than Michigan, but I don't know. I trust the Wolverines a little bit more, Michigan.
I thought about this one a lot. I'm going little brother.
Okay.
Michigan State.
That'd be fun.
I don't know. I don't know why. And Purdue, Nebraska.
Have we been all Nebraska 2 weeks in a row? Two games in a row?
Yes.
I think we might be again, Nebraska.
Yeah, I think for a lot of the reasons we talked about with the byes, Nebraska coming off its, Purdue with the Iowa-Wisconsin two-step, the matchup's better. Nebraska's burned me so many times on these kind of picks, but it just feels like this is a time they come up and win by a couple scores.
I took the Scurs. I'm tired of picking them, to be honest with you. But I have to again.
Hope springs
eternal. There's some difference in the picks this week.
Yeah.
Between Evan and Jimmy, though, there are only, let's see, one,
I think
two,
two.
Three.
Three?
Three different picks. So, Ole Miss, Auburn, Iowa, Wisconsin, Fresno State, San Diego State.
Oh, this is the week you gain a bunch of ground.
Me?
Sure.
No, I don't think so. But I took some risks. I took a chance.
Very good. Well, we'll take a chance by taking the week off and coming back next week with another Pick 6 podcast.
Yeah, we're going to take the week off. We're going
to
go
the next
game.
6 days. I mean, well, yeah. Well, from this
we
podcast.
Took last week off.
We'll be able to recap two exhibition games for hoops.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Maybe we could talk a little volleyball, too.
Yeah, coming off the Wisconsin game.
Wisconsin-Minnesota, so we'll know how good they are.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Enjoy the game this weekend. It's getting colder. Break some leaves. Should be fantastic. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week.